of the crop.
Hello there, and a big welcome to Gooner Podcast 134. This is being done on the Tuesday night after the FA Cup third round win v Hull. This podcast is hosted by the fabulous Piebury Corner. More than just a pie and mash shop, our new hosts are the UK's first ever pie deli. They sell some fantastic nosh, including many named after Arsenal players. Tonight I had the Ray Parlour, which was delicious. We're also doing this podcast here, so you may hear some background noise as the dudes go about their mash orders. Anyway, on to proceedings. I'm your host, Mark Hollington, but more importantly, here is your panel. First up is the man who gets more tattoos every time I see him. He has more opinions than the big book of views, and he has appeared on this pod more times than anyone else. It's my friend and yours, David Udo.
Evening, everyone.
Next is a man who has been doing this podcast since the very start. He changed his name more than Prince, though take it from me, he's a lot taller than the purple one. But he's just as much of a ladies' man. It is the one and only Mustafa Goldstein.
Hello.
And last but never least, bringing a bit of class to proceedings, is the founder of the Offside Sports Photo Agency, a long-time friend of the Gooner, and a man that's been snapping Arsenal since the early 70s. He has appeared on the pod a couple of times and has provided us with some brilliant anecdotes. No pressure for more of the same. Hello to Mark Leach.
Good evening, folks.
So, let's start with the big hot topic. Why are we struggling away from home so often this season? In December, Stoke, Liverpool and Southampton performances were very poor. Why? Let's start with you, Basti.
We're not very good. Essentially, we're a jellyfish without a spine down the middle. We don't have Petit and Vieira sitting in front of the back four, and Chesney's behind them having a puff. You know, it's just not really happening, sir.
David, home form has been generally good over Christmas, right?
Yep.
But why away from home? Is there any difference?
They're two different games. When Arsenal play at home, teams come to the Emirates thinking, you know what, I mean, Arsenal, they're at home, they're going to attack us. If we can hold it off, nick a goal from a corner, and we will nick a goal from a corner, you know, we'll get a 1-0 win, maybe sneak a 1-0, but don't push them, otherwise they'll counter-attack and score. But away from home is vice versa. People are thinking we're at home to Arsenal, let's have a go at this lot. They don't like it when it's up them, and we don't. So I think it's sheer cowardice when we're away from home and we get beaten by a team that wants it more than we do.
Simple as that. Not tactics, Mark, would you say?
Well, I'm never sure you get different answers. I wonder who sets up the defence for corners. People say it's up to the goalkeeper. Does he want anyone on the post? And when that Liverpool-Arsenal game, last minute, just ricochets off Skirtle's head and sails into a huge gap where you could have had your back turned, it could have hit you on the head, you could have saved a goal there. I don't know. Why can the manager say it's up to you, keeper, and if he's going to keep doing that? That's the most ridiculous goal. But I think really our best performance away from home has been the comeback at Stoke to lose 3-2 from being 4-0 down. I thought was that was one of the performances, the turnaround. But I don't know, you guys, part of me was wishing that fourth goal had been given and then we'd have wiped the floor. Then we'd have had to say there is a problem. It would have been writ large, there is a problem.
Yeah.
3-2 at Stoke doesn't look too bad, does it, in the, you know, the paper? But I think papering over the cracks again and again, and the Southampton game, as you say, keeper again, but back four looked asleep.
A back four actually turned up? I'm not convinced.
Well, David, as we all know, the club's reputation was built on a solid defence. Is this Arsenal as we know it? Does Arsene Wenger need a history lesson?
Yeah, I mean, I think he got lucky with the two very, very good defences he's had since he's been at Arsenal. I mean, he inherited the magic back five, which had a reserve centre-half. I mean, when you've got Bold, Adams, Dixon, Winterburn and Seaman, you've got Keown on the bench, that's a luxury. It came to the next really good back four that we got. Ashley Cole, that was fortunate, as it turned out that Silvino's passport wasn't necessarily genuine, so he had to throw Ashley Cole in. Lauren was an accidental right-back. Wenger had no interest in Sol Campbell because he cost some money, and David Dean sorted that out. And Kolo Touré, the 5'8" Ivorian central midfield player, wasn't a natural defender at all. Wenger got lucky, but then when they left, he had to build a new defence, and he's tried, but he's failed. He's got a couple of relatively good centre halves, but even though they work okay together, not all the time, his fullbacks are questionable. And let's face it, even though he's got a magic centre half as his assistant manager, it looks as though his only duty is putting the cones out.
Basti, well, agree with that?
Yeah, I do. And I think that one of the problems with the Arsenal defence is what's in front of the defence. If all you've got is Flamini and or Arteta, the two smallest men on the pitch, as the sort of hard man in front of defence saying you shall not pass, they're going to pass. And then essentially the whole team's stretched at that point, when really you want a buffer. You want someone... And that's why I mentioned Petit and Vieira earlier, because they were not only able to stop people getting anywhere near the defence, or at least, you know, you'll end up with 80% or 70% less traffic than you would if you don't have them there. And plus, they can pass the ball, plus they were great players all round. So that's what, for me, that's what's missing there at the moment, because even if you've got any of the other midfield players who can play in that defensive midfield role, that... All our midfield players, they're all kind of flair going forward players. They're not. There's no one who can just say, you know what, I'm going to be the rock in front of Mertesacker and Koscielny, and give young players like Chambers a bit of protection, basically. We haven't got any protection. I'm quite happy with Debuchy. I think he's someone who... he looks like a proper grown-up player, you know. I think we've got to stop buying 16-year-olds and 8-year-olds and 4-year-olds and people in antenatal care, because it's all this future is all nice and fine. What about now? You know, the next game. We need big, strong, grown-up players who can go and bully other teams.
Well, let's talk about the transfer window then and see if we'll get anybody in. We've got a question via Twitter from Steve Hawkridge, known as Guna239 in the Twitter sphere. And he says, do the panel have any faith that this transfer window will differ from others? And if so, why? Mark, let's start with you on that one.
I could give a very short answer, and it's no. next. No, I can't. I mean, I don't like to get involved in all the speculation. It's quite tiring. And, you know, somebody will say, oh, I was up in Belsize Park and I saw, you know, Messi looking at flats up there. There's always going to be those people.
You've met Basti, have you?
I've never been to Belsize Park in my life.
But it's that kind of thing. But no, I've got no confidence. I mean, as you say, the right players. I mean, going back to Basti's point, Dave's point about Keown being in reserve, we had Edu on the bench then, waiting to come in. Imagine having him on the bench as your, all right, then you have a go-to-day player. Yeah. It's really, unless there is somebody, and part of you does have this mental faith, you keep going back to it, he'll sort us out, he'll go and get the right player. But, I mean, Ramsey's been playing in one of those two positions in front of the back four. You know, highlighted, it spells it out, the match of the day. There you are, 2-1 up. And 3-0 up against Anderlecht, you're going for the extra goals.
Yeah.
And it's just, if you get the player, who's going to coach him and tell him, you stay there? It doesn't seem to be any instruction. Whoever plays there, surely they're going to be yelled from the bench, you, don't cross that halfway line now, we've got this game. I don't see that. That's quite a depressing thought.
Dave, are you feeling any good vibes about the transfer window? Anything positive coming from you?
Not really. I mean, you see an awful lot of stories at the moment that apparently you're after Christian Bielik, a 16-year-old defender, central defender / defensive midfielder. He fits Wenger's type in the sense that he is cheap. Apparently, our bid is at £1.6 million, and they want a colossal £2.3 million, which would be 2.5 months' wages for Falcao at Manchester United. But we'll eventually separate that money by the 31st of January, if we're lucky. The alternative to that is there's an awful lot of rumours about Loic Perrin at Saint-Etienne. He's 30 years old. He's a centre-half / defensive midfielder, not good enough for the French team, but he's cheap as mustard. He's about £5 a bottle, you know, so we'll probably get him, I would have thought, but it's a shame, although when you've spoken to my colleague Mr. Goldstein, I'll tell you my theory, which will certainly come true in this particular window.
So there's Mr. Goldstein.
I've been called Basti and Mr. Goldstein in this one. You're confusing the listeners.
You have many pseudonyms, like you are like Prince.
Just call me Prince.
And you are very funky.
You don't have to be beautiful.
I think we should get the Beast from AFC Wimbledon and just lie him down in front of Mertesacker and Koscielny. No, that's that. We're sorted. We've got Petit and Vieira in one. And did you see the skills? I mean, he was very good against Liverpool yesterday. Yes, I don't have a clue what we're going to do. I know what I do this time of year is I go to the BBC website and I go down the gossip bit and I always read it and I get all excited about all these great like Kadira and all these players we're going to buy, and then come off the 11th hour, you know, if we get a Mertesacker or someone, it'll be a miracle. I really don't, you know, I, like Mark, I don't hold out much hope. I've lost faith in our buying policy. I think we should buy Podolski back quickly, actually.
So, to you, Steve Hawkridge, to answer your question, the answer is no. The panel have no faith in this transfer window.
Not a lot, no.
Thank you for the question, though, Steve. Another question from Twitter.
If I may, what I can guarantee is going to happen.
Yeah, this better be good.
You'll like this.
Okay. It'll
make you all angry.
David's got a theory.
Before the age of 30, Bender will win World Player of the Year. No, we've got a habit of buying someone that we really, really don't need in a transfer window purely for the sake of it, as if we're trying to convince customers, whatever we're called nowadays, that we know what we're doing. I'm pretty certain that even though we plainly need a centre-half or defensive midfielder or both, we'll get to the 31st of January and Arsenal will do what they always do, what they don't need, and that will be the £27 million Edinson Cavani from Paris Saint-Germain. He's on his way out of Paris Saint-Germain. Nobody else wants him or needs him. We'll buy him for the sake of it. We didn't need Ozil 2 summers ago. We needed a centre-forward, so we bought another number 10 for Wenger to throw on the left wing, which he's got a habit of doing, spending £42.5 million just the sake of it. This summer, we just got rid of Amala. We need a centre half, in which case I'm going to pay £16 million for a young right back, who I already tell you by the age of 28 is going to be a defensive midfielder, and we wait until the beginning of January to play him in defensive midfield, and he gets absolutely swamped against Southampton. We don't need Cavani, but it's an excuse to spend £27 million to try and sell some shirts or something like that. I think that'll happen.
Well, you heard it here first on the Gooner podcast. David Udo, we will hold you to that.
Well, his song will be Cavani, because we'll sell Flamini as well.
What, in this transfer window?
Well, I think we should.
Will we do?
As soon as possible.
Okay. Next question from Twitter. This one from Muzan Hassan. And also Michael Nicol asked a very similar question. Well, Michael says, what the fuck is wrong with Chesney? Whereas Muzan Hassan says, is Chesney good enough to play for a top side? And as we all know out there in podcast land, our esteemed keeper was caught smoking in the shower the other day. Quite how that works, I've got no idea. Surely the water would put out the cigarette. But anyway, if I could start with you, Mahok, on our number one.
Who spotted him in the shower? Where was he in the shower? I don't even know.
I think it was after the game. Right. When we lost, he was there in the shower having a crafty puff.
So this info's come from within the club.
Yeah, so who grassed him?
Exactly.
Up?
Ospina. Finger point. I'm waiting long. He might have connections in Colombia. So that was wasn't me laughing there. But
that
no,
was Ken in the background.
I say that he's been. I don't think we missed him. We weren't missing him in the FA Cup run until the final last year. And then we suddenly went, oh, come back to Chesney, all is forgiven. And as I say, just setting up, surely the goalies used to be scared. Playing Sunday morning football, you were scared of your goalkeeper. He'd come out and he'd punch you down the ear hole and make you look like an accident if you weren't doing your job. And he doesn't dominate the box. There's no one there. Used to always start the keeper. And as I say, I don't think he's not looking like a number one to me. And I didn't think that was one of our problems earlier. I thought the problems were the defensive midfield and cover at the back. And now it's gone to the keeper. And it's maybe they're blaming him behind, but it's no good playing the blame game. No, I think we've got to sort out that number one jersey without doubt. I don't think we've got a number five. Who's number five for Arsenal?
David O'Leary.
Oh, Dean Macy. Or Ryan Huddart.
Really? There is a five, because it was Vermaelen, wasn't it? I saw.
Oh, sorry, number five goalkeeper.
No, sorry. No, I'm talking about number nine.
You're not tag with David
O'Leary. No, I'm just thinking, that's one thing. If we haven't got, is that the shirt that's going to get filled? Has Vermaelen's shirt number five been filled?
Well, Cech was available at one point, wasn't he? And I think it was just a non-starter, or maybe he just didn't want to move to another London club. You know, the Chelsea Arsenal thing's too much. But I liked Ospina against Hull, and since I've seen Ospina, I saw him also in a Champions League game. Which one was it? You'll start off for 10.
Was it Dortmund.
I think it may have.
No, he came on as a sub against Galatasaray when Chesney was sent off for a challenge he shouldn't make. But
and they got injured.
Yeah, the two full games were Martinez and gone. And he played proper.
But I've got to say, Ospina against Hull looked really solid on crosses. He came out for things. He just, and every time Hull did attempt some sort of attack, I felt safe. I thought, Ospina's back there. I got a bit of a David. I know he's a lot smaller than David Seaman.
How old tall is Ospina?
5'9", 5'10" in heels.
I mean, is he 5'9", really?
You don't fancy when, that's right, Galatasaray got a penalty and you thought, oh, he's not going to save a penalty, is he?
But I thought he was kneeling down, but he wasn't. He was in Cuban heels.
But having said that, he goes out. He's not scared to go out and do what Chesney does. He lets claim the ball in the 6-yard area or even a little out of it, and he makes that his area. So I like Ospina. I think he should be given a chance.
Did Hull have a corner? Did he have men on the posts? I'll vote for him if he had men on the posts.
I don't think Hull had a corner, did they?
I think they did. They had crosses because I remember him coming in and claiming them.
I can't remember having a corner myself. I just want to know if he puts men on the posts.
I don't think Hull could be bothered, to be honest.
No,
no, that's true.
No, they were hardly going for it full pelt, were they? But David, do you have a problem with players smoking? In the shower.
Well, you know, as long as they're having fun in the shower and being safe, I wish them luck, you know. But I think that's a straw breaking the camel's back. I mean, Wenger's proven in the past that if Chesney's not all there in the head, he'll drop him, probably with a make-believe injury, which he'll get this weekend, because Wenger's got some faith in Martinez as a reserve. Chesney's not all there this year. I mean, not only did he make those two horrendous errors against Southampton, by dealing with that, by sulking with a bottle of water in his mouth for about 90
sweet.
Seconds.
Are you sure it was water? It looked more like vodka to me, mate.
Well, you know, well, whatever it was, you know, it wasn't steroids, I know that much. He's not quite there. I mean, maybe it's another one of those situations where Wenger turns around to the board and says one thing and they do the other. Right, can you sell or get rid of that useless Polish goalkeeper we've got? Leave it with me, Arsene. No, I didn't mean Fabianski, I meant the other one. If we put Chesney on the market tomorrow, would it be Legia Warsaw? Would it be Lech Poznan who buy him? Because it won't be anyone else. Not good enough.
What about smoking? Yeah, that's my smoking question.
Oh, the smoking question. Yeah, I say, Rod breaking the camel's back. I mean, I'm pretty certain that Ozil probably smokes. I mean, you've seen videos that have been going around the internet since he got drawn against Monaco. When Wenger was on the bench there, he was having 40 silk cut every game. I'm sure he does. And let's face it, Jack Wilshere, after he was punished for smoking outside Strawberry Moons off Regent Street in October 2013, Wilshere said sorry by pissing off to Vegas for a fortnight with Joe Hart and went through all the marvels you can imagine. Some players are allowed to smoke, some players are not. And if you're out of form and not good enough anyway, that'll be used as a something to beat you with.
I think in the modern game, right, if you're playing for a team like Arsenal and you're a smoker, sorry, get another job. You know, you've got to stop smoking. You want to play for the Arsenal and you're smoking, it's going to affect your fitness, isn't it? Sorry, you can't be a smoker and play first team Premiership football, because if you do, you're in the wrong job, or stop smoking. For me, that's how I feel about it.
Just say no, kids. That is the advice of Bastard.
Well, no, definitely. I mean, you know, look, I used to be a smoker. I stopped smoking, and we're the worst and all that. I play five-a-side, right? My game got better when I stopped smoking. So imagine what it's like running up and down a proper-sized football pitch for 90 minutes. Or even a 6-yard area in Chesney's case.
Point well taken, Bastard. Focusing on the positive, we did beat Hull. We are through to the next round of the FA Cup. Something to celebrate. Are we confident of FA Cup progress at Brighton? Bastien.
I've got a weird thing about Brighton. I actually went with my dear old mum, God bless her soul, who passed away last year now. We went to Brighton together to watch Arsenal v Brighton in the FA Cup. And we won 2-0. So the spirit of my mum, we're going to beat them 2-0. And I'd like to go to that one as well. Kev, tickets?
What about you, Mark?
I remember the League Cup of Brighton on that, the old Goldstone ground, that completely open terrace, and it lashed down from the first minute to last. I don't think everything's a wet in the game. That was obviously be a different ground. But I'd be happy, but the Chris Hughton angle, you know, Tottenham, ex-Tottenham manager coming in, that's going to put a niggle in it for me. And I know, obviously, we sorted him out last year when he was Norwich manager, but I think he'll definitely get the boys fired up for this Arsenal one. So, you know, it's just away from home form. If you do the basics, shall I say, put people on the post of corners again, we'll be all right. But, you know, I think the Hughton angle is something I didn't want him just coming in. He'll be rubbing his hands with that one, I'm sure.
What about you, David?
I think Hewitt is the Brighton manager. That's in our favour, as he will try and get his team to play football against us, which is what he did with Norwich last year. We beat him like the proverbial ginger stepson. It's a fortunate thing we've got a less than brilliant Championship side away, but the best and worst thing coming out of that is that Wenger may use this as a very rare occasion to play his very, very few reserves. And this may be the only 90 minutes that Mertesacker Saka doesn't play this season. It's a good thing we get to rest some people. We should beat them on paper, but we should have absolutely destroyed Bradford last year, and that didn't go according to plan, did it?
No, so it didn't.
See what happens.
But does the FA Cup still hold the allure it once did, Mark, for you?
Well, the Wembley semi-final was a bit of a killer. I mean, I thought, here we go, we were out. We got back in that. The final was a fantastic game. You're all at home thinking of the Tottenham fans 2-0 up, dancing around the front room and all the pubs there. So that was great. But for me, and not far away, here we are, Holloway Road, the best bit of the whole thing was that Sunday down here. Now, that felt like there was a lot of spirit in this club. Maybe these people don't get into the Emirates to watch the game, but the people out here in the streets around the game, that was the most uplifting thing I've felt. And out the whole day, I saw the bus come down here and it was empty. And I just took a photo, empty bus. It says, thank you, your supporters, you mean everything to us. Time I look back, this bus was full up with people shaking beer off the top of it. All the guys had just got on the bus, piled on, broken whatever there was, holding them off it, and they were just doing their own Formula One style celebrations with cans of beer off the top of the bus. And it went up Holloway Road. I couldn't take pictures for laughing. I just thought, it's almost like the fans are back in this club. And by the time the Emirates Cup comes around again, you think, oh, that was short-lived. But that was the day of the FA Cup for me, was that Sunday down here.
Did you take many pics of the thing yourself, Mark?
I didn't follow them down. I was just round here, and they tried to corral everyone into front there. And I thought, hooray, it'll be separate people lifting it.
Yeah.
I went out in the street, and I felt I got... it could have been the 70s, the 80s. It felt like it was a really proper Arsenal crowd.
Yeah. I remember I went up to the town hall first of all, and it was really, and they closed off all the, in the old days you'd go around the back streets and you could end up right opposite the town hall and that little side street, and they managed to stop everyone doing that. So I walked back all the way, but I managed to sneak my way in. I think the phone call to Kev was made actually to try and lie myself in saying that I lived there, and they let me through. So, and I got into the bit where the stadium is, and then they did the whole parade bit at the stadium afterwards, and I thought to myself, this is, at that time I was so euphoric, I thought this is now a rehearsal for the Champions League celebrations. This is it now. We're moving on, and I don't feel that way right now. I was so optimistic that summer.
I think we all were, weren't we, for a little bit. The Eurofeed was great. How did that compare, though, Mark? You must have snapped quite a few victory celebrations.
I think it was up there. I mean, I'm blimey, start me off and say, oh, in my day. But that was up there. Possibly, I remember having living in Islington, having a daughter about two. She was screaming at David Seaman when they brought the couple has come down. Enjoyed that from a different angle, being a dad. But I thought that was up there. And the kind of anarchy. They tried to barricade the roads, and people climbing over people's gardens, and these security men were getting angry. And I was just videoing it. Everyone was on their phones. It just seemed to be comedy everywhere. And, anarchy. It was great. It really was a throwback. And I thought, we should just like that in the ground a bit more.
I thought
60,000 they're allowed. The 38,000 that were sitting on their hands somewhere at Highbury, couldn't they have filled that up with another 22,000 of these people, feisty people? But hey, that's
they broke the cordon as well over there, because they had these police. It was ridiculous, because where they were doing parading the cup at the stadium, where that supermarket is and that slightly dodgy sauna.
Talk about my sauna like that.
Sorry about that.
I've been there. It's very good day.
I'm sure it is. Yeah. I look forward to it one day. Anyway, so they had the. They had this cordon, and there was loads of room. There was no reason they couldn't let. There were about 40 people who they could have let in, and this policeman was going around with his truncheon, giving it, being Mr. Health and Safety. And everyone was looking at it and going, "Oh, come on, let them in." And in the end, they just ran it.
That's what I mean. It's good.
Oh, great days. You know what? That's been, I've hosted three of these pods now. That's been one of my favourite chats. It's been so flipping negative. It's nice to go
right, back to business. Yeah,
back to business. It's
nice to go back to a time when we were vaguely happy for 10 or 15 minutes. Anyway, let's go back to the shit that's happening at the moment. Oh, no, let's go to the fact that our German striker, the pod on this pod, has gone. He's been loaned out. Why didn't he work out at Arsenal? And let's start with the man with the inside track, you, Basti.
Hello. Yes, I'm afraid to say I'm going to drop a name. I did bump into Lucas Podolski just the day before it came out he was going to Inter Milan. And I was walking down past the Coffee Cup in Hampstead, and there's Lucas Podolski with a very agent-y looking fellow. And he was looking very pissed off. And I'd met him once before at a restaurant. He was really friendly and really nice, right?
What was your conversation time, about that time, Basti, when you first met
at the restaurant?
Yeah, you first met.
I said, have you heard your new song? The woo, because it was new at the time. And he said, oh, yes, I've heard it. He liked it. It was a friendly meeting because he knew that he was there to do a signing or something.
Yeah.
And he was very relaxed. There was no one else there. It was about four people. And so it was quite, you know, had a little chat. And he seemed like a really nice bloke. Anyway, this second time I saw him, I said, hello, Lucas. Like that. He blanked me, got really pissed off. And then today, just today, I spoke to the greengrocer. I told him that story. And he said, he came up to me as well and he did some shopping. And I said, and the greengrocer, Paul, I'll drop his name, said to him...
Nice greengrocer?
Very nice greengrocer. Best greengrocer in the world, Paul. Helped us move all our stuff when we moved as well, actually. Good mate, yeah, good fella. Anyway, so he said to him, "What? So why aren't you getting a game for the Arsenal? Why is he not?" And he said, "Well, it is you better ask Arsene Wenger." And Paul then came out with an insult to Arsene Wenger, and Podolski smiled, and that was the last of it. But and this was when the official club line was he's pulled a little groin injury and all that rubbish, absolute lies. And I mean, this is what annoys me about Arsenal is when they come out with this. You know, PR front of lies, just obvious lies. We all know that we'd heard there was a bust up on the training ground. You know, is it possible maybe that Wenger read out the team for Southampton, or was it Hull, and Podolski wasn't in it, and he thought, sod this, I'm going to Inter Milan. And why shouldn't he? He's 29, he wants to play football, he's a brilliant striker, put him in front of him, he knows where the back of the net is. You know, and he's a bit of a stroller. He's not a runner. You know, we know that he's not like Sanchez. But you put the ball in front of him, anywhere near the box or even outside it, he'll give it a damn good crack on target. Which is, you know, which the fox in the box or out of the box. If you'd have played him as fox in the box, I reckon it'd easily be worth 25 goals a season.
David, was you a fan of Lucas?
I love him to bits. He had this habit whereby he put him on the pitch and he scored, but you know, he shot, and you don't shoot. You have to walk it into the goal. If you score a goal with 300 touches beforehand, my
say that in a French accent.
Wait, is there a boom?
You've got to shoot outside the goal.
He shot too much, and Wenger didn't like it. He was a fan's favourite, though. I mean, he was always putting his face on Instagram and loads of really nice hashtags referring to the club. He got it, he filled in, and he became one of us, as it were. But, I mean, when he joined, his old manager at the German national team, Bertie Vokes, he came up with something interesting. What was it he said? I just need to find this.
I wonder why you're on your phone, David. I thought you were back on Tinder.
While Dave's finding it, I'd say Podolski was a bit like Paul Merson. He felt like one of us. He felt like, you know... There was something likeable about him.
Well, I'll just give another side to it. I'm a bit annoyed. I do some work with L'Equipe, the French Sports Daily. Yeah. Their magazine did the review, Sporting Review of the Year. And the front cover picture was, tell me who scored the winner for Germany in the World Cup final.
Little, what's his name?
That's
little,
it. That was
Kroos. Tony Kroos.
No, it wasn't.
No, it was little thingies.
Mario Götze.
That's
on the front one. On the front page with Podolski doing a selfie with the World Cup on the front, and I thought, that's Podolski to me, all over the place. He didn't get on the pitch, did he?
Yeah.
Hardly at all. Did he play a minute in the World Cup?
He played a couple of minutes. Yeah. Well, he played at the end of a game. Yeah.
And I just think that's you say, fans' favourite, but is it a bit populist what he's doing? I'm not sure. I think you've got to earn that a bit. And I don't know. I mean, one of the favourite goals for me was Bayern Munich, right? We just knocked the geezer flying.
Yeah.
Their captain knocked him over and smashed it in on the near post, as if to say, that's how good their defenders are, that's how good that Neuer is, pal. Have that. And that was very positive. But I don't... Who would you have left out there? Would you say... Say the game is about pace now. Welbeck runs all day.
Well, let's put it this way: against Hull or against was it a Hull where Giroud's out, Welbeck's injured. There's no one up front, and you're Podolski, and you're not picked. You're going to walk. And I'm sorry, but he didn't play for ages. He comes on against Galatasaray, scores two great goals. You know, one in like 3 seconds or something, and then one right at the end. Both very good goals. He has quality. I think he needs to be managed properly, yeah. And he needs, but. He had to give him some games. There were certain games like Tottenham, when he brought Podolski it wasn't Tottenham. He brought Podolski and Rosicki on, and what was the game we threw away? 3-0 to 3-0.
Anderlecht.
Like that game. I mean, I'm sorry, Podolski and Rosicki, I think, have been very badly managed because they've been shoved into the corner, and Wenger's just sort of. He's got his plan, Wenger, and neither of them really fit into it. I mean, Rosicki's now getting a game, just needs must, because everyone else is injured.
And he's been good, though, right, David? I mean, would you agree that when Thomas Rosicki has had a chance this season?
Rosicki?
Yeah, he's done pretty well, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. When he's come in, I mean, he's having said that, I mean, he played a couple of games, then got a 3-month injury. He had 90 minutes, had to take a week off because he's too old. He's exactly the same age as me, 3rd of October 1980, bless him. He's done great. He's done great. And he do wonders putting out cones at Chelsea or Manchester City.
No, I just don't think he's had a chance to get a proper run. Like Podolski, you can't expect a player to come on with 10 minutes to go against Anderlecht and suddenly do it all right. He made a right clang at Rosicki against Anderlecht.
Really? I tell you what, Chelsea and Manchester City substitutes, they cannot do anything for 6 weeks, come on and score. And they get paid an awful lot less at Manchester City than they do at our place.
I thought Rosicki looked pretty good against Hull, but that was against Hull, so there you go.
I think you're being very harsh. Thomas Rosicki, I'm a big fan.
No, I like Rosicki, yeah.
I do.
I like Rosicki and Podolski. And I think you need players that are... What I like about Rosicki as well, I think he's got a flair, and he's got... I like the way he drops a shoulder. There was that little run against Hull. He looked... I think if you give him a chance, I think he's a great player. And against teams like certain matches, you want to play, like against Tottenham. He loves scoring against Tottenham. Play him against Tottenham.
I'd say one thing for him is, like, from my viewpoint, on the touchline there... long lens, the ball comes up to play with back to you, and often it just goes back the way it's came. Rosicki always half turn on the half turn, ready to turn a positive move. He rarely gets it and gives it back to his back four. Always on the half
turn. Right.
And you want to close a player down and go, there you go, I've done my job, you've given it back. He's with him, and you've seen him before, when they start doing the half turn, they back off from that bit, so he makes his own space. Very intelligent
player. And that's what we're missing as well, is a player who does that, because we've got too much sheepishness in our passing. We're looking very, very sheepish, you know. Mertesacker gets it, sort of gingerly walks forward a bit, thinks, oh no, I better not, better pass back to the keeper, you know, there's all that sort of. We haven't got any cut and thrust and kind of come on then, let's have it
attitude. You do realise these players are following the instructions given to them by their head coach, don't you? Mertesacker didn't do that for the German national team. They did alright. You know, I said this on the last podcast. How many times it worked? You come out of a meeting going, yes, boss, of course I will. But in your head, you're thinking, he's fucking stupid. He hasn't got a fucking clue. As a first team player, you have to do what you're instructed by the first team manager. If you don't do that, you'll be made to go to Inter Milan on loan.
Mesut Ozil, come back imminent if you believe the website, so he could be back in 4 or 5 months' time. But anyway, he's meant to be coming back. Will he join Lucas Podolski as a player that never worked out? Or do you have faith he can actually live up to his price tag? Mark, he's seen a lot of big-name players come and go.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just thinking, was it Sunderland away his first game? And it just the way he was picking out Walcott, and he just looked instantly the spark Arsenal needed. But I'm not sure where he's going to come in the team now, because for me, Santi Cazorla is our number 10. Guy never seems to be injured. Rarity, you know, an Arsenal player not getting injured. Cazorla, love him to bits, but he's been shunted wide, ineffective. He's playing in the 10, and I think Ozil's got to come in and say, that's my position, but prove why. Ozil, shunted out wide, it seemed to work for Germany, but he was hardly the star of that team, but he played most of the games in that World Cup. But for us, it doesn't work. With him out there, it doesn't work. I can't see how he fits in. I'd love to think that maybe there's no excuses now. Maybe I thought the cup final was going to be his game. Big open, big occasion, big open pitch. Here you go, Hull. this is something you've never seen before. No, he hid 2-0 down. He hid World Cup on his mind. Maybe plays the World Cup. Is it post World Cup after that? I don't know. But so now there's no excuse. He must have rested for the World Cup. He's got no World Cup on the horizon. He's got to come and deliver now, hasn't he?
Can he make it, Dave?
I don't think so for many reasons. I don't think, well, maybe technically he's better than most of the players around him, that's arguable, but he suffers from the Arshavin syndrome or the Nasri syndrome or the Rosicki syndrome. I've got an absolutely brilliant number 10 here, fuck off to the left wing. And he's being played out of position. You know, aside from when he's getting injured, I mean, that's one of the biggest disappointments. I mean, if we built a team around him, that'd be great. Or if he was slightly more manly, we could do what Chelsea are doing with Fabregas, playing as one of the two in front of the back four, and he could be the team's quarterback. And if he's that good at passing, which he should be based on his price and his value and his wages, it's not too much to ask. But he won't fit in our team, and he will replicate Arshavin on two levels. Number one, in terms of the fact that he just won't quite fit in, and number two, the only place he's going to go after us is Zenit St Petersburg because he's not good enough for anywhere else.
I disagree wholly with both of you.
Good,
as a fellow countryman, also Mr Özil, I would like to say that I think that the combination of Özil, Sanchez with either Welbeck or Walcott running forward, well certainly Walcott's runs, right, I mean, against Hull, by the way, Walcott had a couple of great little runs that, if he wasn't a bit rusty, you know what, he might have got one of the two. It was almost a classic old Walcott, when he chipped it to the right of the post, and you go, why did he do that? He could have walked around the goalkeeper, but anyway. That having been said, I think Özil is a quality player.
He is a quality player.
He has quality passing. And I think if people are making runs for him, together with Sanchez, we've not really seen him with Sanchez together.
No, no.
And I think him and Sanchez together are two world-class players. And Özil's a different sort of player. Sanchez will run his balls off for the club. Özil won't. We know that, right? But nor did George Graham, right? He's a stroller, okay? So let's call him Stroller. Let's go with Özil. Let's get behind him, because I think if he's encouraged and he's loved at Arsenal and he feels that the fans are behind him, he will perform. And he will put, what he can do is put a ball on your little toe, right? And that's all we want. We don't want him to run around. We don't want him to track back and defend. That's not what he does. He puts that ball in that scores. He's had the most assists, right? And by the way, they did a stats thing on him. He actually runs more miles than anyone on the pitch, right? If you do the whole, what's it called?
Opta stat thing.
So he does actually get around the pitch a lot. And he's just not felt confident yet. He's not settled in. But don't forget, he's been out for a long time and he's not really had a good run. And don't forget, quality players like Henri and Bergkamp took a long time to settle in before they came good. I think Mesut Özil could be a real asset to Arsenal Football Club. I sound like an official at Arsenal Football Club.
It's nice to have some optimism oozing through.
Can I just say where the comparison ends with Stroller George Graham? George Graham never went up the ball, looked behind him to see if the defender was there, and then duck out the header. He did that a couple of times. Maybe you say in your system he wouldn't be tracking back protecting Gibbs, but when Gibbs has got his man, there's another guy coming in behind, ball's up there, and Özil looks around and goes, and he just shrugs headers. You cannot, how can you have got to that level of professional football if you can't head the ball in your own penalty area?
There are modern players now that they will not go up for it, they won't head the ball, and they're basically not particularly brave people.
No,
but they can do amazing things with their feet and get and put in some quality passes which result in goals. So if you've got, you can have one. I mean, I've never seen Cazorla go up for a header. Your favourite player?
He'll try.
Well, I don't know. And to be honest with you, I beg to differ. I would choose Özil over Cazorla most games. It depends. I think you really got to pick each game. Cazorla's good, sporadically good, but he does give possession away an awful lot. Not that Özil hasn't as well.
I think he does in his deeper or wide position. But when he's playing up the top there, he seems to be so confident when he's in. And yet, what does everyone talk about? Football chugging along, final third, that's a difficult place. That's where Cazorla's playing his stuff.
It's
in that final
though,
third.
I think they're both good. Listen, I think they're both very good players.
Can I just say, there was one game this season, I think Sanchez was left out, which I think he'd come back from Chile late, but he went to Villa Park. This game doesn't fit in with anything else in our season. Well back up top, playing like a number 9, centre forward. Özil as a number 10. Scored one goal, set two up, Özil. Played the game, 3-0 up at half time. Second half, we didn't cross the halfway line. We shut up shop. Villa hardly had a sniff. Thought, hang on, this is... And then I must have dreamt that game, because you look at the rest of the season, it just doesn't fit in anywhere.
You did dream that game. Villa are the worst team in this league, in my opinion. I mean, I think Giroud scored more goals out of London than Villa have scored this season.
I'll give you one stat. Villa v Bournemouth in the FA Cup. Bournemouth have scored more league goals in Birmingham this season than Aston Villa have.
This is our last question before we get to the fun stuff, as I call it, when we have a bit of frivolity at the end. Do we expect us to recover and go to that miraculous fourth place finish, as we always tend to do, or will we be beaten by Spurs or Southampton? That is the pertinent question of the day. Basti, you first.
Well, beaten by Southampton is possibly an option. Southampton, I mean, the way we lost to Southampton away this season, and to be honest with you, the home 1-0 win was not convincing at all. So I would say, potentially, Southampton, I'm not saying player for player, but as a team, and their manager, certainly, they seem to have something over us. That having been said, I still think we'll come fourth, because if, and this is a big if we can stop getting injured, like half the team, all the first team, basically, every 10 minutes. Because the thing is, at the moment, as we speak, you know, we've got Welbeck out. And if players like Giroud stop headbutting people, and if, you know, and if do you know what? If the spirit in the team, and if we all grow up and pull our socks up a bit, we've got the personnel, right? If people like Ozil come back, and if everyone turns, mans up, and pulls their finger out, yes, we can come fourth or better. But the question is, we do not have the mental strength at the moment, Mr. Wenger.
David, fourth or below this season?
Gary Lineker used to give a brilliant quote, I love, which is, football's a very, very simple game. You get your head down for 90 minutes and Germany win on penalties. nowadays it's the same thing, but you get your head down for 38 games and Arsenal get fourth place on the last day of the season. It'll happen again this year. I think Southampton are really good, but they've not been there before, and maybe it's squeaky bum time, as Alex Ferguson said, and Ronald Koeman's never been a good manager, and he's been sacked from all of his previous jobs. So I think they'll bottle it. I hope that they do anyway.
Spurs have finally come good this season, Mark.
Yeah, they'll come good until the final game. They'll find a unique way to throw it. I don't know. It's I mean, the one all, the equaliser that Newcastle got against us, that was the comedy moment, wasn't it? Our last time we got the Champions League, the one that didn't happen. I can't remember us playing at home. I mean, we must have done the year they went down to West Ham. I haven't even looked to see who we've got, but it will come down to it. But, I mean, who's above us? West Ham. They're like the decorations. They come down after Christmas. That's a given, isn't it? That's West Ham. Southampton, what will Koeman? He could bring in some very useful players on loan with his connections. You're looking at the side they've got now is very good. Everyone said the squad's not good enough. If they improve that squad, they're going to be the team to beat. Tottenham whacking Chelsea. Does that make you think, hang on, these top two places even, you know, are they certain? What's Man United? You know, I don't know. I mean, really, you could look at it like a lunatic and go, you know what, this championship's wide open, mate. We can get these back on these. But I think third's up for grabs. It's, as our man over there, many names, says, I've forgotten which one's his. He said, if they man up, big word there, if, but if they could get it right, the third should not be beyond Arsenal.
Great. Well, look, let's finish on Thierry Henry. He's now become a Sky Sports pundit. Do we think he would be a future Arsenal manager?
No.
Why not, Basti?
I think, like many people, I think Henry probably the best player we've ever had, or certainly up there. You know, is he management material? Tony Adams, you know, I love Tony Adams, think he's brilliant, but wouldn't want him as manager. I don't know if Henry's got management in him or not. To be honest with you, right now I'd rather have Ronald Koeman, or someone who's proven. You know, let's put it this way, you'd have to go out and manage some other teams first. You can't just get Thierry Henry, who's now, you know, however brilliant he is, to come in and expect him to manage a winning Arsenal team. It would be suicidal. You know, however much I love him, and I think he's a brilliant player, is he a manager?
I'm asking you to speculate, Basti.
I personally, I'm not so sure. I think it might be... I don't know if he's management material. I don't think so.
Basti, can you see anything in our...
He's not called Basti.
Superstar, David.
Well, two ways of looking at it, but no. I mean, one of them is that I think Wenger's going to do a Matt Busby, and he'll go on the board of directors, and the first replacement, Franco Farrell or Remy Gard, will get 6 months, and they won't make enough money for Kroenke and his new Los Angeles Rams, and, you know, he's going to get the sack. Wenger will come in as the caretaker manager to the end of the season, scramble fourth place on the last over. Then he'll retire, and then a new manager will come in, Wenger's mate Dragan Stojkovic from the Nagoya Grampus. He'll last 6 months, story repeat itself, and
The men in white coats coming from David there.
So you're saying actually Vladimir Putin is our manager, is that what you're saying? Because that's what Putin does, he sort of goes away for a bit, puts in a puppet, then comes back again.
Yeah, Wenger will be at the club for as long as he wants to, I would have thought. He put the Arsene into Arsenal.
I think he'll retire in 2 years.
That, well, anyway, look, it won't be on retaking over. For a start, he hasn't done any UEFA coaching badges, so he technically can't.
Mark, your favourite Thierry Henry goal. There's a feature in the new issue of the Gooner about great Henry goals. If he's not going to be our manager, what's your best memory of what he did for us back in the day?
Goal against Spurs, which is always handy, which me, with all my experience, but he did me up like a kipper. He just... You know, you see a player on the attack, you think, I'll get my goal mouth lens here. He just kept running and running. He was just outside the box when he got the ball, and he kept running and he kept running and he kept running. And I'm thinking, as soon as the ball's passed, I'll pick up my other lens. He kept running, and rolled it into the corner of the net at the North Bank. Now, given the opposition, I mean, a lot of people go for the goals in the big away Champions League game, but that one at Highbury, that's the one for me.
Well, Mark, it's funny you said he did you up like a kipper, because I thought that moment, you just looked a bit like Gary Mabber.
Dave.
What, when I was putting my internet in?
Not necessarily his best goal, but a Thierry Henry goal that was personal to you.
Oh, Christ.
A goal that means the most from the great man.
I'd say this was when we played Charlton at home on my birthday in 2004, 2005, I think it was. He's got a great ball through to him from Reyes, and he's on the edge of the diagonal edge of the 6 yard box with his back to goal, and John Fortune's all over him. And Henry backheels the ball through Fortune's legs, and it creaks past Dean Carley into the far corner.
Yeah.
One of the best goals I've ever seen from my favourite Arsenal player ever, who isn't Tony Adams, on my birthday, and I've never seen a player do anything like that. Loved it to bits.
Basti, your favourite Henry memory?
I was in the clock end when he turned the Man United player and did that one that's on Match of the Day now. And by the way, can I just say, Match of the Day, although they hate us and although there's a conspiracy, whoever does the titles must love us, because there's so much Arsenal in the titles of Match of the Day, isn't it? There's the programme, there's like that old programme with Alan Sunderland, and there's all bits everywhere. It's like, so we know that whoever
the Brady
produces,
goal, the White Hart Lane.
Gary Lineker definitely isn't involved in the titles,
no,
we know that. It was when Henry turned, and it just went in, and we just went ballistic. I mean, it was just such a great moment. I've got an imaginary, that's the real one, I've got an imaginary one as well, which was his second goal against Barcelona in the Champions League final,
right
also in front of me, which we then went on to win the Champions League final with 10 men against Barcelona. Oh no, I've just woken up.
That was one that I got all lined up with my camera gear. That was it, that was my big
you should. That was, you did it, Dave.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, it's your fault, Mark. But look, we're finished with Mark because we're very lucky to have you here today, Mark. And Simon Rose has tweeted, what was the photo that got away? The one you wished you'd taken. I want both an Arsenal one or any team shot.
Well, it's funny, the Arsenal ones, I've captured some great ones up here. Like shots like Wayne Bridge slotting the ball past Lehmann. I mean, you get to a game and you get a position, you stay there. I'm trying to run around end to end doing Arsenal attack. I've got to be somewhat professional, but, and I was behind the net when Naeem popped that one in past. I'm a real.
I was on the halfway line, actually.
I've captured, and I was one that I've been a perfectionist. I was sat at the Anfield Road end, 89, and I was sat in one position for about 80 minutes. And my Michael Thomas goal picture from there would have been perfect. But one of those lovely Merseyside policemen said, you can't stay here, you've got to move. I said, I've been here 80 minutes, that's fucking long and off. And they bring those big clubs out. So I moved and I've changed lens. And I've got the Michael Thomas goal, but I've got half a grobbler in. I'd have had it better from that angle. But my biggest miss is probably counting frames that nobody does now, digital. England in Turin, the match is over. I've got a roll of film popping away, the players walking off. There was... The matches used to end and people used to walk off the pitch. There wasn't this come to the fans all this. So Gascoigne's getting a bit nearer and nearer. Terry Butcher's putting an arm around him. I'm thinking, hang on, is he having a bluff here? This is good. This is good. This is good. Firing it, firing it. Oh, he's coming close now. What's he doing? Look down. Frame 36. Is he going to take his shirt off? I've got one frame left. What do I do? And in the, he does that. Kisses the badge in that split second. And oh, that's what he's going to do. I'd missed that frame, you know, through that. That hurt, but. There was another.
Somebody else got it, though, didn't they?
Somebody else got it.
You'll rest assured someone else got it.
But somebody else got a picture, which one more was even worse. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, 99 Champions League final. Ball came straight towards me, and the motor drive firing. Any one of those four frames would have done. Beautiful. Sent it back with the guy who was going back earlier. And he processed in our Islington office, and the LEB decided to cut the electric off, and my film's going through the processor. All ruined.
Flipping
out. So every time I see that, people ask me, oh, have you got that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer? Let me tell you a story. Well, the LEB came, no, yes or no, mate, no, but they're the worst. They're the worst. I'd like to think, you know, I was there on the pitch 89, getting all the celebration shots. I got the Michael Thomas goal. I'm not greedy. I don't need any more than that. That's the fantastic
night. Just a perfectionist there, though, Mark. Eh?
Yeah.
Always wearing that little bit more.
Yeah, yeah.
My word. Well, thanks for that, Mark. Good to have you on the pod today. But before we say goodbye, we're very lucky that Kevin Witcher, editor of The Gooner, is here in the house at Pirate Corner to tell us about the next issue of The Gooner. Hello, Kevin.
Hello, Mark. Hello, listeners.
Kevin, and what pie did you have tonight?
I had a Dennis Bergkamp, which was very tasty indeed.
Excellent.
So, recommend it highly. And I hope the listeners are enjoying the ambience of Highbury Corner and the Holloway Road piping away in the background.
They have hosted
ambience
well,
or ambience?
well, a bit of both tonight. So, regards the new issue, it comes out on Sunday against Stoke. Obviously, the standout feature has already been mentioned, which is 6 pages of memories of Thierry Henry's goals from lots of our contributors. There's also an interesting page on the adaptation of an Arsenal membership pack into a guitar. Fully illustrated, a wonderful thing. I hope you enjoy that. There's a piece on Arsenal's golden age after World War II when they were winning trophies, and also one on developing a relationship between Oxlade-Chamberlain and Callum Chambers on Arsenal's right. Although that's scuppered now by the return of Matthew
Debussy. Was that before World War II? Arsenal winning trophies.
Well, they also had a good time after the best. If you know your Arsenal history.
Is that by Brian Dawes' article?
No, it wasn't actually. No,
it was the 50s though.
47 won the league, 50
won the
league
cup. Twice and the cup once. So we could have won the double one of those seasons.
Well, it wasn't around, so
fair enough. Anyway, so £2.50, and we'll also be selling, for those of you who didn't make the Christmas games, we'll still have the issue with the Art of Arsenal calendar that was on sale over Christmas from our sellers. So on your approach to the ground, please stop and buy one.
Excellent. Thank you, Kevin.
Can I just say, if it wasn't for the Second World War, that Chapman Whittaker side could have gone on to win heaven knows what in
that
those years.
Hitler guy's got a hell of a
lot. He's got a lot to answer for, because we could have ended up with like 3 doubles.
And that bombshell, it's time to finish.
Bombshell, like
exactly. Our Twitter address, and thank you for your tweets tonight, is at Gooner Podcast. Email goonerpodcast@gmail.com. But that's it for this time. We'll be back next February, early Feb. So look out for that on your iPods or other MP3 devices. But thank you to the panel. Thank you, Basti.
I had a Dennis Bergkamp as well, by the way. Very good. The pie at Highbury Corner.
Excellent. What did you have, David?
I had the ox, which was ox cheek and venison. Wonderful.
Nice.
Wonderful.
Excellent. Brilliant.
I had the Tony Adams had bits of Terry Herlock shin in it.
I can rest assure you all, there is no bit of ex-players in the pies from here, and you'll be a fantastic host. Thank you very much, Highbury Corner. That's way too many plugs. Done very, very well for your first hosting of this podcast. Anyway, that's it from me, that's it from the panel. Goodbye. That leaves us one thing to say and to do.
La di da di da, la di da di di, all good friends and enjoy your company. Hey!
So you remember the 30s but not the 40s. What happened to you?
Well,
you weren't around. What happened?
The war.